Thank you, Ed. It's very good to be back here again. I want to thank Reverend Amy for giving me the opportunity to speak here this morning, and I really want to thank Ed so much for all of the meticulous preparations for this service. He's a real pro, and it was great to work with him. His homily, or rather his reflection, wound up with a sense of being at home in the great unknown. And I think you'll see that my sermon also winds up at that spot. So two different ways of arriving at the same destination, I guess. Plants can think. Plants have emotions. Plants can communicate with people. That's what the media reported following the publication of The Secret Life of Plants. According to authors Tompkins and Bird, plants are a lot like us and in some ways superior, according to scientific research. Now, I didn't hear anyone criticizing this new data that they were presenting, and so I decided it might be true. I began showing a new respect for Earth's friendly flora. I also heard fascinating stories from friends. Supposedly, a fellow was disgusted with the poor yields of his tomato vines, so he yanked one of them out of the ground and ripped it to shreds. "There," he shouted, "if every one of you don't do better next year, this'll happen to all of you." The following year, he had an enormous crop. Or so I was told. But tomatoes forget. And every few years, the gardener had to repeat this frightening spectacle of plant slaughter. So I watched the newspapers for commercial applications. Even the most bizarre idea will be tested carefully if there's money in it, right? I imagined a winemaker marching through a vineyard shouting into a bullhorn, "All grapevines must increase output by 10%, or prepare to become compost." Would lawyers debate the legality of harvesting philodendrons under duress? I waited and waited, but I heard no more. Then I read The Secret Life of Plants and saw that the authors applauded any plant consciousness experiment, regardless of quality, but other researchers failed to replicate many of these studies. Cleve Baxter, the best-known investigator, complained that Mother Nature does not jump through the hoop 10 times in a row simply because someone wants her to. Those darn plants. They're so smart, they can figure out what a scientist is trying to prove and mess up the experiment. The Secret Life of Plants did not prove that plants are conscious. But today there's solid research showing that some plants possess or process information in quite remarkable ways. There was a whole issue on plant consciousness and plant information processing in Journal of Consciousness Studies not long ago. So at the same time, even though this is now much more solidly shown, it's very unlikely that plants do things like hearing our conversations and getting scared if we're planning to saute them. And it is clear now why we stopped hearing news reports about cacti that can count to 20. When scientists fail to replicate some sensational breakthrough, it isn't news. We hear about the stunning new theory, but not about the dreary disconfirmations. I have become a broad spectrum agnostic, skeptical about whether we have solid knowledge on a wide range of topics. I think most people are grossly overconfident about their own knowledge. People who have trouble balancing their checkbooks think they know how to fix the economy. People who can't cope with irritable spouses think if they were president, they could bring peace to the Middle East. The fact that those who know so little think they know so much is one of the most peculiar characteristics of Homo sapiens. Importantly, intelligent, good-hearted, and well-informed people disagree about issues such as religion, morality, politics, economics, criminology, psychology, child rearing, education, medicine, and nutrition. It seems to me that whenever large numbers of sincere and competent people persistently disagree, we may not know who is correct, if anyone. In other words, we are ignorant. Let's think about ignorance in religion, politics, and economics. In religion, first of all, people typically believe all sorts of things based on very little hard evidence. They think these theories are obviously true, and those who don't believe in them are either mentally or morally deficient. Isn't it ironic that the less people really know with solid facts about some issue, the more they get upset when others question their beliefs? One problem in religion is that a lot of theology is based on religious experience, visions, dreams, revelations. But religious experience is often ambiguous, as open to interpretation as a Rorschach ink blot. Suppose 8 people are dealing with a personal crisis. Each of these 8 individuals have been struggling with some crisis that's particular to them. And all of a sudden, each of them happens to just experience a profound serenity and peace that they had no idea would occur. One of the 8 interprets it as feeling God's presence. Another says it was being in contact with a benevolent spirit guide. Others say it was a message from the unconscious mind, or from the higher self, or the voice of reason, or a psychological insight, or a new brand of vitamins, or it was just a change in mood that needs no explanation. Don't get me wrong about the religious experience. Religious experience is important and has in many cases opened people to new ways of thinking that are quite profoundly significant. At the same time, though, it's open to interpretation. In biblical times, people spoke as if they were receiving crystal clear messages from heaven in specific words understood in their own language. Thus saith the Lord, period. But in modern times, people who think God talks to them in well-defined sentences often quote God as saying things that are crude and implausible. For example, the televangelist Oral Roberts said God told him to raise $8 million for Oral Roberts' university. Well, now there is a particularly specific commandment from the Lord. You've got to raise $8 million. And Oral Roberts said that if he did not succeed in raising that $8 million, he would be called home. Yeah, the big guy in the sky was holding Roberts for ransom. God was going to rub him out if he didn't raise enough dough. In Gary Trudeau's Doonesbury comic strip, one of the characters speculates about how much God could collect by targeting somebody really important, like Vanna White. You remember her from the Wheel of Fortune show. Okay, some things about religion then. But let's now consider ignorance in politics and economics. I'm mainly going to slant these comments toward those of us who are politically progressive and or religiously liberal, but I hope some of this will speak to everyone. How many of you have seen a movie called The Big Short? Some. That film was about the economic crisis of 2008, and it dramatized the fact that this crisis was partly caused by economic and political decisions that increased ignorance. Financial analysts want to have transparency, meaning that they have enough information about an investment to know approximately how much it's worth. But in the early 2000s, many non-transparent investment vehicles were set up, including poorly regulated hedge funds and exotic derivatives. A huge amount of the world's wealth became tied up in these opaque investments. Our leaders then further deepened their own ignorance by irresponsibly increasing leverage. Leverage is the ability to multiply the size of an investment. 10-to-1 leverage, you can invest $1,000 and buy a $10,000 investment. If it goes up 5%, you've made 50% on your $10,000. Very nice. But if it goes down 5%, then you've lost 50%. So leverage is risky. In the year 2000, investment banks asked the Securities and Exchange Commission to expand their leverage. The chair of the SEC refused. But 4 years later, in 2004, the banks asked the new chairman, Chris Cox, to boost maximum leverage from 12-to-1 to 40-to-1. Nobody could predict what would happen in a crisis with leverage at 40-to-1. When the housing market collapsed, 4 years later, 2008, this extreme leverage amplified losses so much that the financial system came close to quite seriously collapsing. We created a system where we could not know how it would function in a crisis, and our ignorance came back to bite us. Well, in 2025, if we can fast forward to present time, it seems as if increasing ignorance has become a high priority of the current administration. The administration wants to eliminate the Department of Education, and it is slashing support for colleges and cutting funds for research about things like cancer, dementia, mental illness, opioid abuse, et cetera. And of course, they do not want to do any research into climate change. I could go on and on and on about the relationship between this administration and issues of ignorance and knowledge and alternate facts and so on. But you all already know a lot about this, I'm sure. I don't need to go on and on and in this depressing recitation of what's happening today. I do want, though, to shift over and talk a bit about the Democratic Party. I think Democratic Party leaders are reality-based and don't just make up facts out of thin air. That may reflect my biases. But in one important case, some party leaders voted for ignorance recently by helping to conceal the extent of President Biden's cognitive problems. Some of the story has come out now in Jake Tapper and Alec Thompson's book, Original Sin. I'm not thrilled with the book's sensationalistic tone, starting with that melodramatic Original Sin title. And it leans very, very heavily on anonymous sources. That's a kind of a source of ignorance. But at the same time, and also I want to say, I can certainly understand why Biden wanted to run against Trump again and beat him. But I wish his associates had addressed his serious decline months before that disastrous debate. This is a pretty tough time for religious liberals politically. But it's also an opportunity to confront our own ignorance and deepen our knowledge and understanding. Those of us who are politically progressive and religiously liberal may have thought we understood our fellow citizens. The success of the MAGA movement has ripped away this veil of complacency. I keep trying to bring the veil back. It's so comforting to think, oh yeah, I understand. The Americans, I know what Americans are like. Well, I have to admit that I don't understand the political and social attitudes of tens of millions of my fellow Americans, including some very smart and good-hearted people among my friends and family. Admitting ignorance is the first step forward here, and then just be with that uncertainty. We need to just be there with our ambiguity, being open to new insights and ideas. I'm still in that uncomfortable space of, I just don't get it. I'm trying not to slide back into my old assumptions and explanations, trying to stay with an attitude of this space available. Now, at this point, you may be wondering why this sermon is called the Gospel of Ignorance. The word gospel means good news, and I've been talking about the bad consequences of not knowing the facts. But I believe that facing our own ignorance can be energizing, enlivening, empowering, and even inspiring. I want to share two ways that facing ignorance can enrich our lives, and the first of these can be simply stated: to confess that we don't know much is an act of humility, and humility is a virtue. For one thing, humility helps us communicate with those who disagree with us rather than just hiding in our silos. UUs might ask whether on Sunday morning or other gatherings of our congregation, whether we talk in ways that would turn off any visitor who doesn't agree with every single idea that's currently popular among us. For example, would a visitor feel at home here who is religiously liberal and politically libertarian? I'm not libertarian myself, but I appreciate the fact that libertarianism, real libertarianism, not just label of libertarianism, but real libertarianism is the opposite of authoritarianism. So admitting ignorance fosters humility. And the benefit that I want to emphasize the most today, though, is that facing ignorance can fill me with awe. When I notice the thoroughly mysterious quality of human existence, I feel profound wonder. I sense this most intensely in the darkness. If I go out for a walk late at night, looking toward the heavens, vast, unimaginable spaces surrounding our planet, filled with countless stars and with mysterious dark matter. At times, I'm seized by the stunning realization that I have no idea what is out there. I am struck dumb by the limitlessness of what I do not know. Awe is a deeply spiritual state of mind. Rudolf Otto, in his classic work, The Idea of the Holy, notes that people in all eras and all cultures have experienced what Otto calls the mysterium tremendum. The mysterium tremendum, a mystery so profound it can make us tremble. He says we encounter this mysterium tremendum most vividly in silence, in darkness, and in contemplating vast open spaces, which is exactly when I feel my own lack of knowledge most keenly. Remarkable parallels between the experience of cosmic ignorance and the spiritual experience of wonder. In some cases, a believer contemplating a supreme being and an atheist looking with amazement at the night sky may be in almost identical states of mind. One says, "The glory of the Lord." The other says, "What glorious galaxies." Both of them experience something thrilling and astonishing, something they can reach toward even though they cannot touch it. The darkness has its own kind of light. The silence has its own secret music. Something about the unknowable essences of life beckons to me, inviting me, something marvelous beyond measure. Perhaps I am drawn to mystery because I want to know where I am, to know my context. And my context is truly the great unknown. And so I celebrate the admission of ignorance. Admitting ignorance fosters humility and can fill us with an awe that is deeply spiritual. On July 20th, I'll expand further on this idea that admitting ignorance can be a sort of gospel. So during the next 2 weeks, I invite you to notice times when you are suddenly become aware that you just don't understand something. Something political, something interpersonal, something within yourself. Don't rush to fit this into what you think you already, you think you already know. Rest in the not knowing. Stay in beginner's mind, seeing with beginner's eyes. Let me close by sharing a personal metaphor. I have sometimes fantasized that I was born in a cabin deep inside of a great ship. I never left that little cabin the whole time I was growing up. But in my early 20s, I became insatiably curious. I ventured into the hall, up the stairs, and onto the deck, where I saw something so astonishing that I ran back down and bolted the door. There was an ocean out there, an entire ocean. That was many years ago, and I still spend most of the time in my little room. It's warm and comfortable, and I know where everything is. But sometimes I feel myself drawn back up to the deck to gaze out over the railing toward the horizon. It's fine for all of us to live in our cozy cabins, where we think we know so much about so many things. It feels safe there. But when you're feeling adventurous, come up and walk along the deck. Let's look out as far as we can see, seeing for miles and miles, yet sensing what we cannot see. It's spine-tingling, yet somehow irresistibly beautiful and alluring, this vast ocean of ignorance on which we sail.